Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Podcast Network. What are you doing?
What does it look like I'm doing? Having group sex?
No, it looks like a little gathering of cokeheads, if you ask me.
Why can't it be both?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 16, Turn Back the Clock. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
How are you?
How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
I am guzzling coffee.
Oh, good.
Because in lieu of being a cokehead myself, it's the only way to get through these next couple of episodes awake.
Yes, indeed.
This is going up Thursday?
This is going up Monday.
Okay.
April 3rd.
All right. So thank you, everybody, for submitting to my Derby Drive. We did, in fact, end up getting at least one, again, with this suggestion. So if you pay attention to the, at least to the popular vote module, I think that maybe all the extra hot greats might split the vote. And then, again, with this one might slip through.
Exciting.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I'm guessing.
Sure,
I'm guessing. But that would take, you know, everybody's got to go there and vote and blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. But anyways, details probably on the site by the time you see this at previously.tv/derby.
We open on January 2nd, 1996, and a stunning statistic in clip number two.
In entertainment news, over 450 million people tuned into yesterday's broadcast of the Rose Parade.
Okay, guys.
No, they didn't.
Guys, guess how many people watched Super Bowl this year, 2017? I know that's not the number of the Super Bowl, but of this year, guess, because I looked it up.
150 million.
Sarah?
550 million.
You're both over 115.5 million, apparently. That seems crazily low to me. But anyway, maybe that many people hate the Patriots. I don't know. In 1996, more than three times as many people wanted to watch fucking floats. What the hell? That's unimaginable to me.
It's not a thing. Parades. You are not a thing.
I hate.
Stop happening.
Oh, God. I've been saying this for years. I don't know who parades are for. I honestly don't. They're so dumb. Like, I can't believe people bring kids to parades and that kids like them in our day and age when they could be playing Minecraft whenever they kids like. Is that the game kids like?
Sure.
It's not Minesweeper. That's the one I always think people mean Minecraft when they say Minecraft.
Minecraft is the new Lego.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about me. I'm old. Flibbity flu. Now's the last day of vacation and Steve and Brandon are throwing out the Christmas tree. Claire comes back from spending New Year's in San Diego with her dad. This provides the episode's framing device, which is she wasn't there for New Year's, so everyone can tell their stories. Yay. And then a question mark starting with our C plot. Steve has half brothers. The first time ever, I believe, we learn that Steve has half-brothers because Rush conned Steve into looking after them as though Steve is in any way capable of doing that. And on the morning of New Year's Eve, Steve goes out to the yard to get the paper and sees that it's been elaborately TP'd and coming back in trailing TP on his foot, which I thought was a very cute detail for some reason, maybe because Steve is our only likable bright spot other than Val. He yells for Austin and Ryan to come downstairs, and Randy Spelling, who previously appeared on the show as a lower level beach club employee under Andrea that one summer, which I'm sure we noted at the time, is now Ryan, and this other loser is Austin. Did they say that they're twins? I missed if they're twins or not.
I don't think so.
All right. Because one of them is like,
for my money, yeah. I recall Randy being much more inept
yeah.
than this, but Austin is actually the more annoying of the bros, in my opinion.
Yes, I agree. He also has a stupider haircut, grading even on a curve of like the age. He's got like a, you know, the same all one length bob that you and I probably both had around this time.
Yeah, the Rand Bowl. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But he's a boy. He's also like, if they are twins, one of them is kind of cute and the other is Randy Spelling. Yes, Dave.
I have a Rose Bowl. I looked up Rose Bowl ratings.
Uh-huh.
In 2014, it was 7.6 million.
Okay, well, that's more like it. So you think they were lying in the episode?
What
or
did
that
they
it's
say?
Just come way down. 450
million. Oh, God, no. Somebody just pulled that out of their ass. There's no way. I mean, that's not even like, what is Oscars? Oscars is maybe that.
It said worldwide, though.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Oscars is
but
maybe
who
that.
Who the fuck
if it was
would
worldwide.
Care even outside California?
That's what I
want to
know.
Outside
like,
the U.S.
Who in fucking like Cameroon is watching
To me,
this?
Rose Bowl is just the place where I always forgot to go to the swap meet or the garage
sale
the thing.
Yeah, the flea market. Flea market. Has a very good flea market. First Sunday of every month, if I recall
football.
Correctly. Yeah, fuck football. And fuck parades that are tangentially related to football most of all. Anyway, back to the twins or whatever, the brothers. They played dumb about the toilet paper at first, but then theorized that Steve must have ticked off a couple of guys by refusing to let...
Autoplay video ad as I was looking up Oscar ratings. I apologize.
Okay. By refusing to let them borrow his Corvette, Steve gives them an hour to clean it up. And inside, Brandon is amused as if it's not his house that's been vandalized or something. Brandon is an idiot. Steve also has a black eye and we still don't know how he got it. So cut to the New Year's Eve party at the Peach Pit after dark. Ryan and Austin try to get past the doorman by dropping Steve's name. And the idiot leaves the door unattended to go ask someone about it. Like you literally had one job, doorman. And
he's
I
now indoor man.
I assume he got fired moments later, but anyway, in the party, Ryan and Austin are obnoxious and disruptive and underage and soon spotted by Steve. There's some comedy about Nat's confusion regarding whether they were Steve's actual brothers or his keg brothers, and that Nat told the doorman to let them in, but that's not what happened. They snuck in, so what? Anyway, Austin, the more annoying one, as Sarah correctly said, gets slapped by the girl he's been dancing up on, and Steve gives chase, enlisting Kelly to help corral them since they like her. And when he finds them, he just grabs them both by the collars and ejects them, and Kelly does nothing, including even be a bitch about it. And in the present, Ryan and Austin come down wanting breakfast full of lascivious compliments for Val, even though she's in a flannel and jeans, but they are not wrong. She looks great. And this is the first that Claire has ever seen of the brothers, apparently. Steve tells them to eat their cereal, including Sarah.
Corn Shooters.
Yep, Corn Shooters is one of them.
Not to be confused with Tequila Pops. I don't know.
Man, Corn Shooters is what I call what happens later.
Oh, Dave.
Well.
Gross.
Oh.
So Steve sends them off with threats about tattling to their dad, which the girls don't think he should do just for sneaking into the club. But apparently there's more to it than that. Back to the flashback where Steve sees that Ryan and Austin shaving creamed his car while he was inside having phone sex with Claire. Where did the shaving cream come from? Like, did they get kicked out and then go to like fucking Walgreens and then come back and no one saw them and no one stopped
them?
I'm
sure Nat just gave them some shaving cream because yes. Seems like a natty thing to do.
True. Might have been whipped cream that he just had around because the diner. But anyway, as Steve rages back inside to get a hose or something, he gets hit by the door as a roadie comes out. The roadie is completely unapologetic and does not even react. By the way, I made a gif of it, which you can see in the visual aids. That's how Steve got the black eye. Sure, that was worth the whole buildup. In the present, Rush calls for Steve and the boys start scrambling in clip 3.
You guys are dead. Dead? Come on, man. Please don't say anything. Ryan will be your slave.
Now, what are you talking about?
All right, we'll both be your slaves. Please, you don't know what he's going to do. He's going to tell us how we always screw up.
Don't ever do anything right.
I'm so stupid.
You have no idea how that feels.
He's not wrong.
No.
Hi, Dad. Oh, yeah. No, they were great. Actually, I was hoping they could spend another evening with us. Having a fantastic time. Yeah, okay, you too. Bye-bye.
We're not worthy.
Your wish is our command.
Okay, in that case, there's a lawnmower and a rake in the shed. Get busy.
Yes, sir.
Why'd you let them off the hook so easy?
They're family.
Okay. Uh-huh. I mean, who cares? So I'll make this quick.
Right.
But A, After this, the whole gang goes outside to drink lemonade and watch them mow the lawn. Like, okay, supervise them maybe from inside where it's not loud and, you know, allergen-y.
Mm-hmm.
B, isn't this like a week after Steve found out that Rush had been lying for his entire life about being his bio dad?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the consequences of that are babysitting teenagers who can't drink on New Year's? And C, while I'm up, or B sub two, I guess, Rush, just leave him at home.
Yeah. They're teenagers.
They're like 15. They can take care of themselves.
Yes. Whatever. I mean, if the issue is that, like, you don't trust them on their own because they're delinquents, like, first of all, that's on you. That's not Steve's responsibility. Get a nanny or pass them off to someone else who might actually be responsible. But also, like, then they are like, should we tell them you have a gardener? Which, like, why don't you make them do something that would benefit you? Like, make them make you banana splits or something rather than take work away from the paid person that's going to be probably doing that in, like, 3 days from now. Why do we care? Sarah, why do we care? Moving on.
We don't. Moving on.
To our B plot, Susan has an ex. Brandon starts his story in the middle. It's just struck midnight on 1996, and Brandon looks over and sees Susan's ex, Jonathan Kasten, we assume, spoiler, it is he, kissing her, and Susan quite obviously trying to escape his clutches, like pushing him away. But we already know there's going to have to be a whole thing about Brandon misinterpreting her reaction, because from here we just slam into the credits, and after that we find out, yes indeed, this is the famous Jonathan Kasten, former Condor editor, first mentioned in the Halloween episode, and also the only one of Susan's exes we've heard about other than the guy her mom caught her kissing when Susan was in the eighth grade, so who else would it be? Brandon goes back to the beginning, which is the morning of New Year's Eve, when Susan calls to say she has to pick up someone at the airport, trying to sound casual as she says it was him, and he's on a layover from Tahiti. He called from the plane. Okay. She wants to have a life of her own, but Brandon is not about that in clip number 4.
Listen, I was thinking, would you be upset if I flaked on calling the New Year's thing?
Yes.
Come on. You said you weren't even that interested in going.
No, that's not true. I'm very interested in going to Colin's thing.
Ew.
Okay, I'll be there. I might be a little late.
How late?
Never mind. I'll be on time.
You're the worst!
Oh my God. Like, this is how he's being abusive,
yes,
basically.
Yes, he is.
This is how abusers talk to their abusees, is A.
Yep.
B, no one has ever been interested in going to or getting on Colin's thing, except occasionally on a plane, for some reason, Kelly, who was also a bitch about it. So, shorty, please.
Uh-huh. Ugh. So, at this party, sorry, thing at Colin's, Susan is desperately calling around on the phone at someone else's place to try and get Jonathan a date for the party at the Peach Pit after dark that night, because he's crazy about the Coors. The Coors are the band on New Year's Eve. Sounds like a fucking rager. Jesus Christ.
Also, it's a party. What do you need a date for? It's not McSorley's in the 50s. Can he go by himself?
I have so many other alsos. Also, maybe this would be going better if you were calling eligible gentlemen if he's obsessive about the Coors. Just saying. also, Jonathan went to college in LA with Susan, so presumably still knows a lot of the same people Susan knows. Maybe this should be his own responsibility in getting himself a date. Also, I totally had the dress that Susan is wearing in the scene, except mine was in black. It's like a satin flocked floral thing. I wore it to my college graduation later that year. Moving on, Brandon is annoyed that Susan has taken this on, and for once, I kind of can't blame him, even though, as we've said, he was being abusive before. So at the party, Jonathan shows up stag to undermine Brandon and make me wish I were his date in clip number 5.
You remember Brandon, right?
The Express, right? Yeah, sure. Sure. No, don't worry about it. Don't get up.
Sarah?
I mean, first of all, I said aloud, don't get up, right before Kasten said it.
Yes.
Second of all, I kept thinking of, you know, there was that running gag on the Monkees where they'd tell Davy Jones to stand up,
yes,
and he'd be like, I am standing
yes,
up.
Yes, of course
short.
I do.
That.
Yep, me too. That's what I have in my notes as well. There's talk of Jonathan's jet lag, and he looks straight at Susan as he says there's a hotel bed with his name on it. But he can't spend New Year's Eve alone in a hotel room, I guess because he's an idiot. That sounds fucking great to me. Anyway.
Yep, me too.
Since all Susan is doing is looking furtively at Brandon, Brandon decides to progress the conversation by asking what Jonathan was doing in Tahiti. He was raiding Club Meds for men's journals. One of those old magazine assignments you can't get anymore. Sigh.
Also, speaking of eligible gentlemen, mm-hmm. Come on.
Well, yeah. Also, I assume his editor has yet to tell him it should be Clubs Med. Were you worrying that Jonathan's shots at Brandon would be limited to his boorish manners when Jonathan came to the table? They are not. Clip six.
Hey, I gotta tell you, Brandon, I have really been enjoying your columns.
My column?
Yeah, I got a subscription to the Condors, going away present from the gang at the paper. And I really like your work.
Well, thanks.
Okay, so...
Second prize is two subscriptions? Exactly. Kind of a shitty going away gift is that?
No one has a subscription to a college paper. Just go and pick it up.
Parents.
Everywhere.
Parents do.
Oh, that's true.
That's it.
A lot of parents read it. Brandon looks all smug at this compliment, and Susan looks relieved that Jonathan has ingratiated himself. Like, I'm the only one who knows Jonathan has been mining these stupid columns for ammunition he's going to use against Brandon later. Even if he's not, this compliment is extremely condescending. But... later, Jonathan is about to regale them with the story of his trip to Lollapalooza last year when Susan takes off to go to the bathroom, leaving Brandon to offer Jonathan something extremely valuable in clip seven.
You know, Jonathan, I wasn't exactly looking forward to seeing you again, but you're all right, man.
Thanks.
My clip ended sooner than I thought it would.
Such a dick.
Oh, God.
And it's making me fall in love with him, honestly.
Yeah.
I love that Brandon believes that's going to mean anything at all to Jonathan. But anyway, Jonathan says,
yes, Priestley has to deliver his lines with his head pitched up at a 65 degree angle. He's so much shorter than Gaston.
True. God. Anyway, Jonathan says that Brandon might change his mind once he hears this. Clip eight.
I'm in love with her, Brandon. And I've been with enough women to know Susan's the one I want.
Then why'd you break up with her in the first place?
Susan didn't tell you?
No, not really.
Well, I'm not surprised. It was very personal.
I see. Performance problems?
That's funny. But I'll tell you right now, there is a bond between Susan and me that no one could ever come between.
And I'm supposed to?
I don't care what you do, Walsh. You're irrelevant.
Ooh. Tell you what I'm gonna do for you, Jonathan. I'm gonna chalk this whole conversation up to jet lag. All right, big guy?
Okay, enough talk. Who wants to dance?
That's me.
He says while led along the gangplank.
Oh shit, Brandon is really committed to leaving this conversation. In case you guys forgot, Brandon doesn't dance. This is huge. Also, shut up, Brandon. Just shut up. Then it's midnight and Brandon and Susan make out while Jonathan watches from the table like a creep. Brandon's New Year's resolution is to never let Susan go. And then Jonathan comes over to say goodbye and gives Susan a kiss that goes too far. And contrary to how it looked in the cold open, Brandon is standing right there getting cucked, but not for long. Clip nine.
What?
Hey, that's it.
What's it?
Brandon, please, it's all right.
No, it's not all right.
Please just drop this.
Well, I'd like to, but I don't think Walsh wants to.
Is that an invitation, Junior? Because we could always go outside and I could drop you.
Brandon, please?
Yeah.
Don't have to go very far. Right? Because he's short.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good night. I'm sorry I caused you so much trouble.
Jonathan, I don't want you leaving upset.
Hey, he's a big boy. Let him go.
Can't. There's some things between him and me that you just don't... understand.
All right, Tara, Sarah, place your bets.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Jason Priestley is taller or shorter than me?
I think he is probably almost your height, but very slightly shorter.
Shorter.
All right. Continue, and I'll see if I can find that out.
Do you know how tall you are?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, this Brandon, and he's trying to put any kind of claims on Susan is gross. But I have to ask Sarah, when she's like, there are things between us you don't know, do we ever find out what those are?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, guys.
And, but like,
sorry.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I just got it. It was really easy to find out, but to my surprise. He is taller than I am. So
I can see from here. It says he's 5'8". I doubt it.
He's not 5'8".
He's a Hollywood 5'8".
If you found that on the IMDb, he's lying.
It's on the result page of Google.
there's a website called celebheights.com.
Oh, yeah. Celebheights is for real.
All right.
Like, it's a weird thing that people are fetishistic about with men, the way that people are fetishistic about women's feet, which you will also find many forums devoted to
this thread.
Uh-huh.
In which, okay, wow. All right, so
people get granular.
Yeah, so they're like, that's with shoes, blah blah blah. Average, after the average out everybody's input, after everybody discusses it, they're saying 5'6".
Yeah, that's a Hollywood,
which is like, yeah. So which is like a hair taller than I am. So I'm like five and change. I'm like 5¾ or something like that. So. Anyways,
I think back to back, you would probably be around the same height.
Yeah.
I don't think you're actually that short, Dave.
He projects a lot of height.
I'm always jumping, right?
So do I. I don't think you're that short. Yeah. I think you're like 5'7½".
Well, I live.
Oh,
We're at like 2,500 feet above sea level. So that's. We live on the side of a mountain, so it's probably skewing the results.
Dave's always standing on 2,500 foot lifts.
Yeah.
Like Bruce McCullough. Anyway.
I always present that in inches, too. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm 26,000 inches tall.
All right, I am the first one who, as an actual 5'10 person who showed up for many, many OkCupid dates with men, claiming to be 5'10", who came up to my sternum, like, I will not scruple to tell somebody that I think they're lying about their height, including my now husband, on our third date.
Oh.
And he was like, I'm 5'9". I'm like, no, you ain't.
I'm so relieved that you soldiered on through his mendacity, because you have a very happy relationship now.
Yeah, well, and he also projects height, especially with morning hair. He's easily taller.
Yeah, I can see that.
Than I am, but I
appreciate the effort, Sarah, but I know I'm short.
It's hard to tell on a show, too.
Oh, I didn't say you weren't short. I said you're not as short as you think you are.
It's hard
Why
to tell.
Why are we still talking about this? God, this episode is terrible.
So boring. I'll just say, to put a button on this, that it's hard to tell how tall anyone is on a show, because I assume they're all very
Apple
short.
Boxing
so it's
it.
Exactly. It's yeah. only they're all only like tall or short relative to each other, which doesn't mean anything. Like, I think Ian Ziering is probably legit pretty tall.
All of that is to say, I am fine making fun of his height. I just want everybody to know I am also
where it's
that height.
From. Yeah, and I'm shorter, so whatever. Moving on.
Oh, yeah,
in the present.
You're like, sometimes I lose you.
In the present, Brandon is bummed, but he also hasn't tried to talk to Susan yet because he sucks. Val suggests that he just call her, but Brandon says it's on her to call him, and if she doesn't, then she doesn't. Whatever, tough guy. On New Year's Day, Brandon decided to distract himself with work, but when he went to the condor office, Jonathan and Susan were already there, and when we see them through the glass, Jonathan's on the phone, and Susan looks totally miserable. Like, there's no mistaking how her emotions are in this moment. Like, we don't know what they talked about, but it's obvious like they didn't just fuck or something. But instead of being
She's also being a complete drama queen about like that she can't talk about it, which when we find out what it is, I get it, but just say you can't talk about it. And then, like, I hate to take Brandon's side, but she's being kind of a dick.
Did they kill a hobo together?
Cut him off. Okay. I don't know.
Instead of being relieved that whatever he missed was most likely some kind of a fight, Brandon is a bitch about it in clip number 10.
Oh, boy. Well, looks like you two just kept the party going last night.
About you, did you find that fight you were looking for?
There's really something going on between you two, isn't there?
No. No more than there's something going on between you and Kelly.
But
But you didn't exactly see us playing tonsil hockey last night, now did you?
Look, I don't want to cause any trouble between you guys.
Yeah, you do.
Brandon, whatever I said or did to offend you last night, I apologize. I take it back.
Great.
He's serious.
Listen, Suze, Boynton's wife said it would mean a lot to him if I'd stop by.
Then you should go.
You know, he'd love to see you, too.
Boynton used to be the paper's old faculty advisor.
Yeah, I know who he is, and I know he's very ill.
Okay.
You know, I'll meet you outside.
Okay. I'll see you around, Brandon.
Yeah. Why'd you two break up anyway? You make such a cute couple.
You know, I'm really not up to having this conversation with you right now. I really have to go.
It's great. Why don't you just let me know when you are ready, okay?
Have a nice day.
Or a nice life.
Ooh.
That is like one of the top five most asshole-ish things otherwise normal people say. Have a nice life. So rude. If someone said that to me, I would probably punch them, honestly.
And it's just so, I mean, it's so weak too.
Yeah.
Like, have a nice life. Like, okay.
Right. I mean, not that Brandon is otherwise normal, but seriously, don't say that. And in the present, Susan comes trudging up to the house, pulling down her sleeves over her hands and saying hi at a barely audible volume. We get it. He demoralized you. But they say they missed each other. And Susan says that Jonathan is on his way back to Seattle. Brandon stares at her like a dick and she says nothing happened. And Brandon is a bitch about it in clip 11.
That must have been quite a fight, seeing what a studly guy he is.
Please.
Studly?
Don't make me sorry I came here.
What's he got over you?
Nothing I can ever change. But I love you. That's what I told him.
He's not going to give you up.
Well, then that's his problem, isn't it? Could you take yes for an answer?
You know, a long time ago, someone told me that when you strike oil, you should stop drilling.
So, are you stopping?
I don't know. I think maybe I'm just kind of getting started.
Murph!
Yeah, This is not how relationships should be, guys.
No.
Just saying. We still have an A plot to get to, God help us all. But first, we have a message from Michelle.
Mary Claire, the invaluable friend who introduced Michelle to this podcast, works for their local university as an employment outreach manager. So, in honor of the very important work Mary Claire does both professionally and off the clock as a podcast recommendation expert, Michelle has asked us to count down the top five ways the students of California University, or maybe just seven of them in particular, set a horrible example for how to prepare for employment after graduation.
Number five, treating a job like it's a lark you can do one shift at a time, fun, like Donna.
Number four, perpetuating the myth that working on a college paper is a paid job, like Brandon.
Is not. Number three, establishing unethical practices at one's own small business, from dodging financial obligations to one musical act to committing sexual harassment on another, like Val.
Number two, declining to object to a completely unacceptable task like firing his own boss, like Steve.
And number one, oh God, failing to deliver important documents so you can go to a pool party, like Brenda. We will never forget.
No, we won't. Mary Claire, we know you are doing everything you can to keep the youth of today from making these kinds of mistakes as they embark upon their careers. And for that, and so much more, we and Michelle salute you.
Well done, Mary Claire. All right. Ooh, so sad that you have to be the segue to this. R.A. plot. A in quotation marks, I guess. Donna has a hassle. Whoops, I mean parrot. And Colin has a bigger problem with coke than he let on. So, New Year's Eve morning, Val is excited about having someone to kiss at midnight for the first time in her life, which means something's obviously going to ruin it. But would you guess the something would be Donna's stupid bird, which sucks? Donna's bird is the new Dylan's futon in terms of things I irrationally hate, by the way. Donna's bird doesn't shut up and is interrupting Claire and Steve as they try to, quote, take a nap, unquote. Also, Joe is rigging up some kind of fix with the door of the cage, so I assume we all know where this is going. Claire comes in with an extremely reasonable request in clip number 12.
Any chance we can cover the bird cage or put a muzzle on her or something?
That's mean.
She's not that loud.
Compared to what? A jackhammer?
Claire, look, I'm sorry, but Joe's just fixing the cage and then she'll settle down.
Why? What's wrong with the cage?
The latch is busted. So it'd be very helpful if you and Kelly made sure that no one opened it.
Yeah, sure. Wouldn't want the little birdie to fly away, would we?
That parrot in the Mac Rangers?
So obviously a PA.
Is that a parody of the Mac Rangers?
No, I said, is that parrot in the Mac Rangers?
Yeah. Oh, God. It's the worst. Everything about this is so inconsiderate. Starting from giving someone a pet. Don't do it. That's an obligation.
Never, ever do it.
But in addition to that, even if you have a pretty good idea that Donna would like a bird, which how would you? No one does. She lives with roommates. Like, this is the loudest fucking thing in the world. God, horrible.
P.S. This kind of bird, like this section of the bird, whatever, genus tree, uh-huh. They live for like 30 years.
Yeah, they live a really long time. This is
not like a fish.
No, it's a multi-decade obligation that you have imposed on someone. Horrible. Anyway, in the present, this is where David comes into Castle Walsh and says he doesn't want to hear any more about the bird, nor does Val, who says it cost them enough problems on New Year's Eve. Cut to the party at Collins, where David in his giant plaid flannel shirt grabs Val in her satin blazer, guys coordinate, and yanks her away from a conversation with Colin that to him looks like a cokehead convention. She angrily denies that she is doing coke and they try to have a fight about it, but neither can really take it seriously. And they both laugh at themselves and kiss before David heads out to see his mother. I actually thought that was sort of a cute moment where they're both like glaring at each other and then like, just kidding.
Yeah, it's like, it's Colin, who cares?
Exactly. And sure enough, Colin does have another vial of coke, which he gives to Val to hide before Kelly arrives. And she's reluctantly looking downcast and nodding when, right on cue, Kelly walks in and is a bitch about it in clip 13.
Is that for my benefit, I wonder? Kelly, don't even know you're here. My point exactly. Thanks for keeping him warm, Val.
No problem.
Isn't there some sort of, repellent you can use with her?
It's New Year's, and we need to make a New Year's resolution. How about no more fighting about Valerie?
Thank you. You're not back into the holiday cheer, are you?
Absolutely not.
Oh, good. Then you won't mind if I,
don't.
I'm frisking you.
Frisk away. I'm clean.
Ugh.
Ugh. Shut up, bitch.
Shut up, both bitches. Bitch A and bitch B. Anyway, at the Peach Pit After Dark party, Val loiters around sadly, waiting for David, disappointed that he's not there to enjoy the cores after he was the one to turn her on to them. Now, look, I know that people can like all kinds of different music, but the David that we've been presented to this point doesn't like any fucking Irish band with a goddamn fiddle in it. He just doesn't. Like,
no, he doesn't.
You got the cores. It's fine. I'm sure some people like them, but like, you don't have to keep assigning fandom to various characters, especially the ones to whom it makes no sense. Like, is Donna into the cores? Sure. Kelly? Yes. David? No.
Also, you're a business owner. Like, if they sold out your club, that's fine. But other than that, you only have to be a fan of how many people the band brings in. And that line was so awkward. I really felt bad for Tiffany Thiessen.
No kidding. And I also like that Brian Austin Green wasn't anywhere near it so that he didn't have to try and look like it was true. Anyway,
yeah.
Where is David? He's up in a tree trying to fish the damn bird out. Donna doesn't know how she got out. Broken cage. Hello. When she got back from Collins, the cage was open and she was out on the deck. And Joe is not doing this because he's at some alumni thing, but she gives David an out saying she knows that Val is waiting for him at the club. But David apparently would rather do anything than see the Coors. I'm paraphrasing, including deal with this fucking bird. So he declines to take that offer. And Donna, of course, declines to insist and has to make it awkward in clip 14.
Well, if I didn't say it before, thank you.
Anything for a friend.
Yeah, bird.
You know you'll always be more than a friend.
Yeah, I know.
I hate the bird God. So much. It's like leaving on the squawks and stuff is like, it's like poking a bruise. Anyway, Colin arrives at the Peach Pit after dark. And as soon as Kelly has left him for a second, he asks Val for his vial and reluctantly she fishes it out of her bra. And if you think I didn't make a gift of that, you are crazy. Back at the tree, Joe has shown up to go after the fucking bird. And when David calls Val from his cellular phone, she doesn't pick up. Somehow she's not next to her office phone seconds before midnight on New Year's Eve at the club she owns. I'm shocked. And when the clock strikes midnight, Val is alone and sad. And Kelly baby voices her way out of the party because she has to get up and help Donna get ready for the next morning, which is the fucking parade. Colin comes out of the club with Val on his tail. He is clearly lit. Val tells him he's not driving, but he doesn't plan to. She's going to. And as soon as she's pulled out, David appears, having come from a sobriety checkpoint. Uh-oh, which Val pulls up to, demanding Colin's stash. He says he did it all, and they both keep it together for the cop. But when he has moved on, clip 15.
What an idiot.
What?
My stash was in your ashtray the whole time.
You're sick. You know what? You need your head examined.
No, what he needs, his head, what his head needs is to be hit upside, and then he can fucking walk home. Yeah. Are you fucking kidding? I can't believe she kept driving him. Fuck him.
Yeah. Oh, call the cop back, open the door, kick him out.
And P.S., before this, like, we didn't have a clip from this section, but, like, you as a club owner really can't, like, you can sort of assume that maybe people are coming to the club on drugs or maybe doing drugs out of your sight, but if mm-hmm. you know for a fact someone is doing drugs in your club,
yeah,
you're on the hook for that shit, and mm-hmm. you need to kick him out.
I didn't know that. That's a good point.
I mean, whatever, I only know this because I watched a lot of Sopranos times, but still.
Well, in the present, she says that she yelled at Colin the whole way back to his place, but he had already crashed and she had to drag him up the stairs. David, clip 16.
That's what she says.
So close.
Oh.
Still drink. Funny. Val says that David knew she came right back to the club and he doesn't really seem that mad about it. Enter Donna and Kelly. Claire insists to Donna that she didn't mess with the bird and that she's relieved that Joe recovered her. And Donna's like, no, you're not. But they're donating her to the aviary at the zoo. This bird caused more problems than everyone else knows about, apparently. Cue the flashback to the night of New Year's Eve when the bird was still at large and she, Donna, and Joe are having this fight in clip 17.
Look, this is not David's fault. He is not a bird catcher.
Yeah, well, if he hadn't chased the bird so high up the tree, he might have had a chance to grab her.
Look, can we just forget about this? The bird is not that important.
Oh, really? Do you know how many hours I spent training that damn bird?
Well, do you know how many hours I have put into the Tournament of Roses? And in 45 minutes, they're picking me up, and I have to look good and feel good in front of 10 zillion television viewers worldwide. Where are you going?
To get the cage. I figured maybe if she saw it, she'd jump in it.
Yeah, well, she flew out of the cage. Do you remember that?
I've got to try something.
Huh. Great. You gonna go back to the park? Oh, you're crazy. The bird probably flew away the second we left.
Yeah. And whose fault would that be?
Joe, I have to get ready. Joe!
We can't just forget about her. She's our bird. Do you care about her?
Yes, yes, of course I do.
Oh my God.
No, you don't.
I'm starting to think this bird is standing in for something else, but what?
It's like
I've
Cromer
got
versus
a bird
Cromer.
For both of them.
What was that, dude?
I said it's like Cromer versus Cromer.
Okay. Buddy, it's a fucking bird. You're lucky Donna didn't dump you the second she saw it. Anyway, Joe says that he will see her in Pasadena, but Donna tells him to skip it. And after getting Donna ready, Kelly went to get Colin, who was not exactly ready for a parade. He rebuffs all her efforts to get him up in clip 18.
You don't understand that. I can't. My head's pounding.
Did you get high last night?
Come on, Kelly. It was New Year's Eve.
Oh, I see. So that's why you were so eager for me to leave. Who'd you get high with, Valerie?
Let me go back to sleep, all right? We can fight later. My head's killing me. I got a headache.
Well, that's going to get you the aspirin. I picked up my attic mother off the floor. I'm not going to do the same for you.
Fine, I'm coming. Coming.
Yikes. Also, the talking into the pillow doesn't hide the fact that you're always a bad actor, Jason Wiles. Sorry.
Yeah, not good.
So Kelly ends up watching the parade with Steve. The parade, by the way, looks fucking unbearable. But when Kelly says that if Joe doesn't show up, she's going to kill him, she's not wrong for once. She is wrong seconds later when David and Val show up and she's a bitch about it in clip 19.
You know, it's a new year. I made a resolution not to even talk to you.
All right, don't talk. But you better listen.
Spray shrieving up, Val. Your little coke buddy's down for the count.
Oh, is that what this little snit is about?
He was fine when I left him.
Look, if you want to shoot the messenger, that's fine, but I had nothing to do with it.
Like you didn't get him high at Christmas.
Whatever you may think of me, I don't do cocaine.
I'm supposed to believe that, right?
I don't really care one way or the other. All I care about is coke.
Why?
What is this?
It's Collins. I confiscated it last night. Now it's yours.
Why?
You're his girlfriend. You deal with it. I'll break up with him. I don't care. I'm washing my hands of the whole thing.
Why didn't you just dump it, Valerie?
Because I wanted you to believe me. Let him deny it's not his.
What?
That's sick, by the way, because I think she means let him deny it is his. He is denying it's not. Whatever. That makes no sense.
And also, how is it proof?
Right.
It could be yours and you could just be giving it to her.
You could have found it in the bathroom.
She's not
going to
do any.
Yeah.
You could just use baking soda.
Right. All great points. Here comes the rose court. Donna smiles serenely, and as she passes her friends, we hear Joe yelling for her before Donna herself can see him. And he's in the top row of the bleachers, and when she sees him, when he sees her, he holds up a sign that reads "Joe loves Donna" on the front, and then he spins it to read so that she sees it says "Damn bird" on the back, and it's actually kind of funny and sweet. I'm sorry. Donna cracks up and she looks actually happy and natural other than her hair. And it's sort of a sweet moment. Let's end it. I have nothing else to say about New Year's Eve.
Yeah, let's. That was agonizing. The framing device was super contrived.
Yeah.
This is not the acting core that can sell it.
Oh, no.
Let's wrap this up.
Indeed. With our most valuable player. Claire, who was smart enough to avoid all of this and just hang out with her dad on New Year's Eve, probably drinking cognac and listening to good music and being chill.
And among the people who were forced to suffer through this horrible event, Kasten.
Yes, good one.
Just for the you're irrelevant answer.
Yeah, completely. Least valuable player. I know you're all thinking I'm going to say the bird, and I do hate the bird, but it's Joe that bought the bird. It's not the bird's fault. It's the bird. So I'm saying Joe. Don't get people.
I am also saying Joe, and for that exact reason.
Yep.
PSA, do not give pets as gifts ever.
No, indeed. Let's go to the Dot Zbornak challenge, one for Sarah.
Ooh.
This might be a tough one, but I know we can do it. Five ways Steve narrowly avoids a sexual harassment lawsuit.
Yeah, he actually isn't that bad in this episode, but I guess permitting his half-brothers to lech on Valerie in her home is not great.
Yeah, preventing them from getting anywhere near the club to lech on stranger women would be number two.
I don't know. Maybe someone in the Casa Walsh neighborhood is triggered by toilet paper.
Or triggered by him coming out in just a robe, which probably has nothing on under it other than the socks.
And I don't know. I can't think of a fifth one.
Let's say he's lucky that none of the ladies came out of the party and got shaving cream smeared on them from his car when it was vandalized. And that makes a five. This was a tough one. Sorry, Dot. Great handle, though.
Yes. Great handle. Great idea. Usually he's much more sexual harassy than Indeed. This.
Yep.
Maybe he will be more sexually harassy next time on Again With This. When Joe wears a giant turtleneck and is sad at the doctor's office, and Sean Donnelly, Kelly's dad, comes to town. Jackie tries to manage Kelly's expectations, but Kelly, Dara,
is a bitch about it.
Yes, and then she snorts her feelings. You'll need some Colombian therapy to get through our visual aids for this and every other Again With This episode on our website at previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at PreviouslyTV, and you can follow this very podcast at AWT90210. I'm Master Tube Watcher Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. I'm here with my co-host, Hooter Movie, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. Our producer is Gathering of Cokeheads, David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Heights are bare feet estimates derived from quotations, official websites, agent resumes, in-person encounters with actors at conventions, and picture films. Other vital statistics like weight, shoe, bra side measurements have been sourced from newspapers, books, resumes, or social media.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.